Reading from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, chapter 24. Text 38. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jai Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Arti Yoga Advaitera Puna Puna Bhadre Ekeshvara Srivas Angane Gadi Pade. As Dvaita's lamentation steadily increased, he rolled alone on the ground of Srivas's courtyard. Omigana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Sapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from upstate New York. It's a little, Stuyvesant Falls, it's a little mecca of senior Vaishnavas. Ravindra Srupa, who lives next door. Satrup Marj lives across the street. Of course, that's Prabhupada's original biographer. And Jayadvaita Marj happens to be visiting. I just got a message from him. So somehow, even if it's kind of a COVID, I can't see them. I do feel comfort that such souls are around. Now, today I ran into a little bit of a dilemma. You know, I just usually look at the verses beforehand, and generally I don't even have to, because if I begin reading verse by verse, there's going to be something that inspires me. But sometimes, you know, it takes some time to figure out. And I began to read what we're going to be discussing today, and I really couldn't figure it out. So it's a little bit, because what's going to happen is Advaita Acharya, who's Bhaktavatara, an avatar of God, Panchatattvatmakam Krishna Bhakta Rupam Sarupakam. Nityananda, who's the Sarup of God, they begin to have this argument that can almost be interpreted as a little bit mundane. Why are they getting angry? You know, you look at the Bhagavad Gita. I was just having this discussion with Kasturba yesterday, because he's mentioning the need to become equipoised and how much the, and in the, he was saying in the 12th chapter of the Gita, that's what Krishna says pleases him. So he's saying, really, you know, we need to meditate more on this and see how. And I also had that realization. I wrote that article called The Yoga of Slander and Sickness or something, quoting from the Stoics, who they see, and this is our philosophy too, that whatever happens is coming by God. Whether you're sick and whether you're healthy, whether you're slandered, whether you're praised, it's coming from God. So if you have a deep realization, why should there be such a difference for you in your consciousness? Rather, we invest our energy, not in our destiny, what happens to us, but our free will, how we react. Because that's what's going to institute a change in our consciousness. Not changing the world. Changing our consciousness. Of course, based on our conceptions, we do try to make our environment better, but we don't have control of that so much. Or it's minimal, because in Gita says there's five factors of action, and only one is the doer. The material conception is we're the only factor of action, and it's very, very minimal. So this thing of being equal poise, I also explain, you know, coming back from India, and the theme of my Vyas Puja was 70 years old, and looking back on my life, and, you know, what is my conceptions, what are my vows, and how one of the things is as Tamal Krishna Maharaj once told me, he said, you know, we always think that in the future it will be better, but it only gets worse. Don't want to depress any of you, but that's the way the material body works. At least on the material platform, we dwindle and we die. So this investment in our free will and our consciousness and the training of being equal poise, not just getting angry and reacting and being attached and trying to control. Just being equal poise. Tatikshava Karunaka, Tatikshava tolerance. Trinadapi Sunichena. One should be more tolerant than a tree. The image of a tree, giving shelter, giving everything to others. Offering all respects to others. So these type of things, they're within the philosophy. They please Krishna. They're the result of devotion. They may not be the absolute correlation with devotion, because there can be people with no devotion who have good qualities in terms of externally, in terms of tolerance and things. What's that verse? Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat akinchana savai gunas tatta samasate sarahava bhaktasya katat mano rate dasati davato bhi. Devotee has all good qualities. Mano, not just mental calculations based on the, but anyway, so this is coming up where we see this and it always recommends, at least among the devotees, when you see senior Vaishnavas in some argument, not to take sides, not to make judgment, not to try to understand it. And in one sense, we can understand it, because what attracts us to devotees more than anything else is their inspired side. That sense that Krishna is speaking to us through them, that Krishna is coming to us through them, that Krishna is speaking through them, Krishna is inspiring them, and not being so waylaid to the side if you know the culture or the behavior is of course it shouldn't be bad, but if it seems, you know, something we don't understand or their nature or their ego. But when it comes in terms of the acharyas, it's hard to understand. We're going to read this, but I want to take advantage of something. Brahma Tirtha, I just wanted to ask you some question. We can call this imperfect questions, imperfect answers. But based, I want to take advantage of it, just based a little bit on our discussion. Okay. And I just wanted to ask that point. I'm telling people I'm writing something on Krishna West, and I try to be a public intellectual. I try to analyze things, et cetera. And the point came up of Indian culture. And Ramatirtha Prabhu made the point to me that some of the aspects of Indian culture that Prabhupada brought were not maybe even the original culture of India, but things that he picked up that were passed down. For example, the dhoti, I mean, with the back pleats, was a dress in Bengal. It's not described in the Vedas like that. They didn't even have tomatoes in India years ago. They didn't eat nightshades, which is potatoes, you know, but Prabhupada gave us karunga potatoes. He gave us tomato chutney. So not everything that is the traditions of India that Prabhupada brought, we can say are the eternal culture. But what I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned that, could we say something like it reflects that culture and therefore Prabhupada picked it out? Like, for example, the dress, you know, it may not, you know, the dhoti may have been something from Bengal, not the cloth, the robe, but couldn't we just say it's Prabhupada chose that, you know, for a reason, that because it reflected that culture more than what people were dressing in the West? Well, that's the question I wanted to ask. Because I may delay my, I'll just mention one more thing. I may delay the paper I'm writing for one more week to actually give that a lot of more thought. Because that's, I think, a very important point. Yeah.
I think it's a really important point. I have a whole collection of comments Prabhupada said on dress. And he first said he really didn't assign a dress. And when devotees started doing it and it worked, he said, okay, you can dress that way if you like. And then later on, he encouraged that dressing because it worked. So I have no evidence that Prabhupada made that linkage that you're suggesting. Now, I'm not saying the linkage might not be there. Then the question comes, when we go to India, are we seeing northern India, let's say? Are we seeing a shadow of the spiritual world? And I know there's leading devotees have advocated that very strongly. Having lived in northern India, I sure hope a lot of it's not a shadow of the spiritual world. And then there's one more complexity which I don't have resolved. When I go to Vrindavan, it's a different story. And some of my entrance into Vrindavan was helped by you. You and Shivaram Swami, Satchidananda Swami, Borjan, help me understand. Well, when we're in Vrindavan, we do actually end up with our pinky in the spiritual world in some way. So, and of course, your experiences on that are much more intense and profound than mine. I'm just a voyeur who wanders in there for several weeks. You actually live there. So in Vrindavan, we indeed do have some connection with the deeper spiritual world, ironically, from a material point of view, Vrindavan is one of the more backward places of India. I mean, you still have open sewers and, I mean, all of these things, which, so in order to really see Vrindavan, it does require, it's like going to the moon. If you really want to see whoever, whatever kind of ethereal bodies are suitable for the moon, Prabhupada said you need to have a certain consciousness to see them. And wearing, as Prabhupada once said, a $40,000 spacesuit doesn't mean you really went there. So similarly, the tourists that go to Vrindavan but don't do the hard homework to get the visa to go to Vrindavan really don't see it. So when I'm looking at the external Vrindavan, is that a reflection of the material of the spiritual world? Again, I would kind of hope not. So yet there is that little mystery there that Vrindavan is a reflection of the spiritual world. Even myself, who I consider kind of duller in these regards, can see that. So it's a real fine line to say what of, and we're talking about northern India now for the most part, what of that really reflects some deeper spiritual culture, and what of it is just, you know, the modern is just what India is for the last 500 years and doesn't necessarily reflect a spiritual connection. And one more point, putting the externals aside, when I was, my last trip to Vrindavan, I typically call my brother every day, my older brother. And he said, what kind of place are you living in? Wherever you call me, because I'm calling from different parts of town. He says, wherever you call, I always hear people singing. I never heard of such a place. I mean, there is that spiritual aspect of Vrindavan, of the connection with the holy name, the connection with Krishna. So how much of the externals we see are a reflection of the spiritual world? That's the mystery. Sorry I've gone on so long.
No, that's good. But I think I'm going to ask a question that's going to get to the crux of the matter.
Okay.
Which is the thing I want to bring out. If Krishna West was running the Bhakti Center, what would be changed?
That's a good question. I
want to make the point, because the Bhakti Center, I'm not going to call it Indian culture so much, because then it gets confused.
Yeah.
Like an eternal something. But the traditions of India that Prabhupada brought to America, and it's a selection of it. But obviously he bought some traditions in India. So my impression was that it probably would be changed.
I've asked the same question, and I've even discussed it with Haridai Nanamaraj, because one thing that is imported from India that is very Indian in that sense, you don't find this other coming from other parts of the world, is deity worship. And one of the cores of the Bhakti Center is deity worship. Now, the deities are not on the first floor. They're not even on the second floor. So when people are coming in to see the Bhakti Center, they're getting a restaurant. They go upstairs, they're getting yoga or educational classes. And once they had developed a taste for something higher, then they go to the third floor where you have the deities. At Krishna House in Gainesville, our board had considered over the years, one of the mistakes we made is putting our temple room right on the first floor when students come in. Been better. It's more for once we get a taste, then that's where we go. So that's a piece from India, clearly from India, that ought to be preserved. I'm not sure how, in my discussions with Maharaj, of course he's, says you have to have deity worship. It's we need it for our own purification.
I'll give you another example too, is that, And I think a lot of the people that are on the thing could understand. Yeah. Actually, one of the things I initially did, my strategy to spread Krishna consciousness, I had actually three prongs, right? One, the philosophy. Two, there was this devotee called Savita Bhattacharya and Nanda Dulal. They were Indians, very high class Indians, very high class and very spiritual. I take people to their house to see that kind of culture, you know, how people live like that, centered on Krishna and the way they cook and the way they serve and the way they, it was a real impact. And the third thing was taking them to India. And the same thing, I think even a lot of the people that I brought to Krishna consciousness, it was because of their experience, you know, and part of it's the culture. Part of it is seeing like what a sadhu is and how they live and how they relate, et cetera. So maybe there's some aspect of that that's maybe universal, because, you know, we also believe that these things, it's universal. He who loves God, his religion is perfect, and cultural principles, you know, may be more universal and then reflected in different ways. But I kind of have that sense when you go there and you see the way that people live, you know, et cetera, that it actually is very attractive to people.
Of course, I wanted to go to India since I was a little boy. I've lived there, and I just had to cancel my tickets to go to India in December. So why do I go? Because when I go to holy places full of holy people and holy sanctuaries, I get a great benefit. So I don't think I would deny, nor people involved with Krishna West, that there is a holy connection to India, that there's a deep, that there's something in India. It's just like to take away Vrindavan from us is like taking away Mecca from a Muslim. Yeah. You just can't do it. I mean, they're intertwined. When the original Malcolm X, the black Muslim, went to Mecca, and he was very anti-white, and he realized most of the Muslims were white, he had an epiphany, which cost him his life. He got assassinated for that. So, and it's same thing, Vrindavan, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said in Mayapur, what was his prayer? When the Russians, Europeans, Americans, everyone would be dancing together. And so there is something special about the place. There are special holy places in India. Of course, Prabhupada said, well, like New Vrindavan, it's also a holy place in the West. I consider the Bhakti Center a holy place in the Lower East Side. Nevertheless, there is something privileged about India. There is something very special about it. And then the hard part is for us to parse what is really special about it and what are just, you know, another place that has its own ways.
Yeah, I have to say also, it's not just the Dhams in India, because I visited India, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And the spiritual culture was all there. I'll give you another example. You can just comment on it, okay? Yeah. I have one kind of like a student. You know, he's not an initiated disciple, but I've given him a lot of shelter, and we're close. And he's the next Sanskrit translator after Gopi Pranadana.
Oh, my.
And he's there's no one that can chant Sanskrit as beautiful as him. No one. And what is that? Udemy, Udemy. They have a thing that you can put courses. I mean, he's highly rated on that.
Yeah, sure.
But his Sanskrit pronunciation. And he chants the Sanskrit verses so beautifully. So I'm trying to help him because he's got these courses out there and they're first class. So I thought, well, okay, wisdom of the sages sometimes have a space. Wisdom of the sages sometimes have a space of 15 minutes for an up and coming musician, if they're really good. So I said, send me some stuff, right? And I'll send it. So I sent it to them. And, you know, they said, it's not for us. So what he sent was, and it's so expertly done, is Sanskrit, he's also a guitarist, is Sanskrit mantras to country and Western music.
Oh my God, that's brilliant.
Brilliant. But Raghunath, what? I'll send it to you.
Sure.
It's not only brilliant, but the display of it is brilliant, you know, because he does graphics with it, where the Sanskrit is. But, you know, when, you know, Kasturban Raghunath, for their audience, which is 7,000 people listening to it, you were actually interviewed on that.
Yeah.
Their audience, they wanted something more traditional. So there's something that Raghunath and them are attracted to within the culture and presentation of India, which you also were attracted to and wanted to go there.
Yeah.
And I feel that if there's any shade there, that Krishna West was a little bit too reactive to it, and maybe took out some of the aspects that people at realization use to attract people to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, well, that raises a little different point. And there's the philosophical point and the pragmatic point. For example, the dress, as I read the history, what Prabhupada did was a very pragmatic point. What worked, for example, Prabhupada wanted, when he went to LA, he wanted them to keep the pews in the church the devotees had bought. But then, you know, it became obvious that the culture of the people joining was a floor culture, not a sitting culture. So the pews were out. So that had nothing to do with anything philosophical. It was pragmatic. So then the question is, what is it people are attracted to? But you're raising a deeper issue. You're trying to say, well, this attraction that folks have to something traditional might have a deeper spiritual connection. But in this regard, I again turn to, let's say, Satru Maharaj's art.
Yeah.
Now, that art is a strange art, and it's not everyone's taste. At the same time, there is a niche following that loves his art and comes to Krishna through his art. So this is no criticism of his art whatsoever, but rather it's a matter of taste. So the audience that Kasturba has, and I'm amazed by what Kasturba and Raghunath have
done. It's a very broad audience.
Just as an example, there's this fellow I know in town. He's 35. I know his parents well. I've been to their house, and he heard me speak, and he contacted me. I haven't seen him in a decade or since he was maybe 20. He contacted me. He says, he's a graduate student, a PhD here. He says, I listen to Raghunath every day of the week.
Many people do.
And so what they do is incredibly good. And part of what they do, and the music they have at the beginning, the music that they have at the end, it's that very traditional connection to India.
Yeah. So I think that's really I think the question boils down to this. I think the question boils down to this. Or these questions: to what extent is the traditions and culture of India effective in the communication of Krishna consciousness? And to what extent is it create an environment to help you with Krishna consciousness?
That's exactly the right question, but the subtext question is, okay, now we have this environment that takes you to Krishna, and what if that environment represents some eternal spiritual connection? Well, certainly the holy name does, that part of it.
Well, I would say, let's say dress, right? Okay. Let's say dress. Just wearing cloth rather than, you know, sewn clothes, really. Just wearing like cloth, you know, something that you could wash yourself at night and hang up over there. You know, that type of simple living, et cetera, simple living, high thinking, was that reflective more of a culture, a traditional culture back there, the way people relate to each other? For example, I was once writing a book called Lessons from the CC. And all the behavioral aspects that were connected to Krishna consciousness and how people related, you know, and what culture is, it's an environment that helps people to grow. There is a spiritual culture. You may not say it's India per se, but then it has to be God's culture, their principles, you know, and then let's say how it's reflected in how people dress, you know, how it can be used. For example, Prabhupada, he was very happy to bring back to the lady saris, right? He brought it back in the saris, you know, and he mentioned something about that, you know, related to consciousness. So I think we can get down to the point that it may not be, there's some connection with certain traditions in India with spiritual culture.
Well, the idea of simple living, high thinking is certainly a culture, and Krishna himself preferred Vrindavan over Dwarka, let's say. You know, his heart was in Vrindavan, the simpler coward place.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, so we can say that there is to those who are on a deep spiritual path, simplicity resonates in life. It does, and in India, it's well done. The danger comes when that cry for simplicity becomes a principle, not a detail of devotional service, and therefore interferes with our ability to connect with people. Raghunath and Kasturba are the opposite. They found out what really connects with people, and that's what they do. Even the way they dress, the way they talk, the way they interact, it really resonates and connects, and they've done it. And since it's all based around the holy name, that is a deep spiritual connection. It's done in parampara, but they're not mixing up details and principles. They're using details that work.
Yeah, I understand that, but I'm saying the point that I was making with Krishna West is in reacting to the kind of Hinduization of the temples, right, and the lack of ability of the temples to communicate, you know, and maybe the polemic necessary to establish that. Did it, in one sense, or in its presentation, denigrate or neglect, you know, things that could be used from the tradition?
That was Venkata Bhatta's point. And in the writing you sent me, you've eloquently expressed his point. And I don't always I mean, to what degree is Krishna West, what you're asking is, could Krishna West be overreacting? And I think that's the question you're asking. And Prabhupada stated very clearly that in his pranam mantra that he said his mission was to bring Krishna to the West. And I mean, that was his pranam mantra. So to the degree we do things that bring Krishna to the West, it's successful. To the degree that we make it an uncomfortable place for Westerners to come, is to the degree we're not following pranam mantra. So what would happen if Krishna West took over the bhakti center? I often think of that. Certainly the third floor would stay the same. The second floor, the bhakti center niche for that community has been the yoga community. Now, if somebody else was running it, maybe they'd find a different community, maybe the intellectual community, or not that the Bhakti Center doesn't have intellectual programs, but the primary thrust has been the yoga community, and it's been very successful that way. So why not success? It works. So it's a somewhat, I hate to put it this way, somewhat utility is the principle. Does Krishna West, some advocates of Krishna West...
I have no objection what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's just the way they were promoting it that didn't accommodate, as far as I could see, people who were using successfully aspects of the tradition.
I agree with you on that point. I agree with you on that point. I do.
Yeah, because the rest of the stuff...
You're correct.
Yeah, the rest of the stuff I kind of... I think the point is, I think most people, a lot of people realize that, not just Maharaj, and we're already acting on it. That was my point. But one of the...
Your point's well stated. I mean, I agree with you.
Yeah. Let me just finish with one thing. In Bunki Bihari Temple, one of the most oldest temples in Vrindavan, they opened the deities one day, and Bunki Bihari was in a pair of jeans with a cell phone. They almost killed those young pujaris. They almost killed those young pujaris. You know, so
that's bad taste in my mind.
Not only bad taste, but there is something reflecting in the, you know, there is an eternal dress. Yeah. There is an eternal dress, and there is an eternal culture. And I don't think it's, I don't think that's restricted to India. I think it's reflected in the world with honor thy mother and father and you know, how people treat people and so many ways. But I think that culture in many ways, although it was covered, but when you get down to the pure India, which I've seen by going to, you know, villages and Brahmins' homes and things like that, I think it came closest to reflecting that, you know, in the way people dressed. And I think you know that because you had so much experience with Indian families. It came the closest to representing that, you know. So I guess when it's imported to the West, we know the problems with it, but I'm just trying to find out the connection. But okay, you say the last thing, and then I'll go back a little bit to my...
I enjoyed this a lot.
No, I did also, because I think when you have this kind of dialogue,
yeah,
it's like an axe, you know, when you sharpen an axe, you hit it from both sides. So more of this type of thing has to happen. And it's called vada, where you're not trying to present your view, but getting the right conclusion.
Well stated. I mean, in my own thought, we should all be a little bit more Buddhist in the sense of taking the middle way. A little tongue in cheek here, yeah. But taking the middle way where there was, unfortunately, with Krishna West, there was one advocate of Krishna West who was a fanatic. And so he kind of, the idea that we want to reconsider or what we're presenting in America going to satisfy Prabhupada's pranam mantra is a legitimate question. And then he unfortunately politicized it and then it made a mess out of it. Also there was a second aspect of Krishna West that has nothing to do with India or not India. And it's probably one of the most important aspects. And that is the hermeneutics of understanding Prabhupada. And that was a key point. And to understand Prabhupada, you just can't do quotes. What one very senior devotee, good friend of yours and mine, said to me once. I asked him, he had formerly been an ISKCON leader. I said, "What's the most dangerous thing for ISKCON?" Without thinking a second, he responded, "Prabhupada says." Because there's no hermeneutics, there's no nuance, there's no contextualization. He said it under what circumstances, this, this, or that. As Tamal Krishna Maharaj's advisor at SMU, Cleaver, said, the problem wasn't that your spiritual master didn't give you enough. He gave you so much that now you have to think about it and understand it deeper.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. This was fun.
I'm sorry if I'm babbling on too
much. No, you're not. You're not. This was really fun. And because the subject today was something that would, I'll read it next week or Wednesday. So I thought actually this morning what I do. And I said, if you're on, I could discuss this with you. And also because I may not even have a new Monday morning greetings tomorrow.
Okay.
You know, I finished it and I showed it to many people according to you and everybody liked it. Because I like this role of trying to be a public intellectual, yeah. I want to really get it completely right. You know, I really want to understand exactly what the problem is. And one thing is that point that is it's the traditions of India that Prabhupada brought, which I assume, and then like you said, and which ones he wanted to apply. Actually, the first temple I came to was the Los Angeles temple with the church pews. And we sat on the church pews. And then the temple room was in the back. So it's a fact. I mean, it's a fact that, you know, it was sometimes more thoughtful then than now. And I remember it was so amazing. We had a little lecture by Brahmananda. Then the feast came, which was fantastic. But I have to say the beautiful American boys and girls with the saris and the robes and the incense was really kind of attractive. And Brahmananda got up in the front. And after we ate, he said, "Now that you had nectar for the tongue, now you'll have nectar for the ears," and invited us behind, I guess, where the fate exhibit is, where the temple was. And I remember when I used to go to Europe with Hari Kesh Maharaj, the temple was always way in the back, you know. But again, I think with realization, people will understand the modern world, the attraction to Indian culture, you know, where to put the temple, what to do, you know, and you know, like, for example, you know, the Brooklyn Temple is a little bit more traditional in some ways than the Bhakti Center, but I see a lot of potency there too, you know, with the devotees that are there and their commitment. Anyway, I'm probably going to put an old Monday morning greeting so I can think about this for the next week. But thank you.
Thank you, Maharaj. What I so enjoy about your classes is, and our discussions, I never walk away without questioning some things I had been thinking. I never walk away with that. I got to go deeper into this. And, you know, just, it's just my own nature. That's the way I raise my consciousness. You know, somehow I have to think about things.
Mutual. Me too.
Me too. Thank you very much, Raj.
Okay. Okay. Would anybody like to share a reflection today? That was great. Okay. Jamuna Jaya?
Thank you, Raj. It was lovely hearing the conversation. It's beautiful to hear you speak and unpack things. And I was just reflecting about the culture aspect. It's so funny. I love the deity worship culture part of it. That is something that speaks so, so deeply to me. And as someone coming not from, from the East, and I really tend to love that aspect, the incense and the offerings and stuff like that. The dress, you know, I'm a little.
What happened?
To me, did I go out?
Yeah, okay, you're back.
Okay, I'm back. But I really appreciate, as a much of a New Yorker as I am with my dress and everything, I love the artiques, and I love that part of the culture. And I find that that really helps me. I remember years ago you asked in a class, like, what's your flavor? And Nikunja Lila was in the class, and she said deity worship. And at that point, I was thinking more of my flavor was kirtan, but now I really feel more of my flavor is actually the deity worship and that traditional part. So I appreciated your conversation a lot.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else like to share reflection?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Bo. Kalachandra, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. That was fascinating. That was really great. I wonder if I could just share a couple things quickly.
Please.
This is not meant as a conclusion to the question, but I asked Tamal Krishna Goswami, you know, essentially these questions about the relationship between culture and Krishna consciousness in the mid 90s. And he said something about culture that just changed my whole perspective on it. And he reminded me about how, you know, we talk about culture as, you know, sort of, you know, this phenomenon in the world, but also, you know, culture has a scientific meaning. And he said that culture is a environment, you know, a medium, in which an organism survives well and flourishes, in which, you know, a living organism can flourish, and that, you know, we put it in that culture. And he said that he felt that the culture of, and it, you know, it's too simplistic just to call it Indian, but, you know, whether it's Indian culture or you know, aspects and remains of Vedic culture, he said that is a culture in which bhakti flourishes. And I just thought that was a very interesting perspective. It does not dispute you know, the activities or the efforts of Krishna West and others to make bhakti or Krishna consciousness accessible to Westerners at all, but I thought it was a really interesting component of the discussion. He was very much, as you know, a proponent of utility being, you know, a real, a primary consideration. And he once threw me out of the temple for not dressing in dhoti kurta. But his purpose for that, his purpose for that was not the principle of it, but the utility that it was a Sunday feast. There were quite a few members of those present who did feel very attached to that culture and tradition, and he felt that I in particular not wearing that clothing would not have a good effect on them. Anyway, I just wanted to share those points.
It's just a great discussion because I'm thinking the two aspects are that the environment, which helps something grow, and the other is what effect it has on the accessibility of Krishna consciousness. And I guess there's variants of opinions on that. Two, this is what will make Krishna consciousness most accessible. To this won't at all make it accessible, to the fact that there are aspects of it that are very effective in making it accessible. So I think that's really where it stands. Okay, well, that's great. Thanks. Anybody?
Yeah. And thank you. I think you've just nailed those are exactly the two factors and how to find the correct balance for those. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I'd have to write another article. It's as a writer, you can understand, I completed it and it was really flowing. But then when I started to discuss it, which I don't think most people would even see, you know, this all these subtleties of the points, you know. And what I like to do in Monday morning greetings is get down to there first before I begin writing. So it was a challenge. Okay. Anybody else like to share a reflection?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Gail? Hare Krishna. Yeah.
Yeah. Two things really quickly is as a girl who, you know, grew up in Brooklyn and is still working on even having an attraction to going to India one day. You know, when that description was there of the deities in jeans and a cell phone, I found it so instinctively and viscerally offensive.
It was.
You know, so I don't know what that means, but, you know, That was my reaction.
And it'll never happen again. What happens is these caste Goswami families rotate taking care of the deities. So then one family did it and they had teenage, you know, they had sons. They had young people that were there that were already affected by that culture. And when they did that, people, my God, it was almost a riot. Okay, yeah, and then
just one other point I wanted to mention was that the I really resonated with that, with the problem of the Prabhupada says thing, you know, because it doesn't invite, you know, reflection and of context and
not only that. But things are understood in context. So if you take away the context, you misunderstand them. So if someone just says something, like for example, one time Prabhupada said, all my devotees are pure devotees, right? And then if you look at it and you go, okay, what about that jerk over there, you know? And this guy that just ran off with someone's what, you know, and this person over here that's, you know, what's Prabhupada said, all my devotees are pure devotees. But the context of the conversation is when, you know, it was early ISKCON and someone was challenging the authenticity of Prabhupada's disciples. So when he said, all my devotees are pure devotees, he meant that sincere people are taking to the path of pure devotional service and they're authentic. And the other thing, and I think Rabindra Sarup Prabhu, my neighbor, who's a PhD in philosophy, he made the point that when people of Prabhupada's culture that are teachers speak, it's context relevance. And in the West, we don't think that way. If someone says a statement in the West, we want it universally applicable. When someone of that stature says something, they're stating it in the context and they don't mention the context because they understand that people will think that the people understand that it's in a context. You know, so they but Westerners seem to have a reductionist mind. And if something is said, they want it to be universally true, not just in a particular context. Anyway, that's another point. Anybody else would like to have reflection?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna Gurudev.
Hari Bo.
This conversation always makes me think about, like, when you say you put your body where you want your consciousness to go. You know, so the look, the dress for me is authentic, and it takes you out of your old culture of thinking, you know. It's kind of, when I was a kid, I was attracted to hardcore and punk. I wanted it to be so far from where my present culture was, you know. And then the same when I came to Krishna consciousness, it was that that change of culture, because it's a change of mindset.
That's an amazing point. That's really a good point, that there's a connection between the external and internal. And I think Prabhupada saw that to a degree. For example, with the dress and putting on a sari, and, you know, it's like a policeman. He can make an arrest plain clothes, but the uniform, one, they can be identified, and it gives a mood. And, you know, I was a sportsman. So, what, you know, we put on a uniform, you know, with our school colors, and it facilitated what we want to do. So, you know, whether it was the, you know, so I do think there's an element of that, of the things that Prabhupada brought and the identification. But I never would have guessed that you're into hardcore. Okay.
I think that's a great, oh, sorry, Marsh.
Yeah, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I think that's a great point. I was just reflecting on what you're saying about, like, depending on whatever we end up wearing, our consciousness goes towards that. So it really does, I feel like, really makes a huge difference. Because if we just stay in regular, like, American clothes, there's some kind of consciousness that goes behind that by what we're being fed through media and other things.
Okay. Good points. Good points. Anybody else like to share a reflection?
Krishna Maharaj, Bhakti Devi,
okay, yes.
You know, there are aspects of the traditional culture that that I find very attractive, because it's such a far departure from what we're used to here. But I also think that there's a balance between the traditional and our own culture that you have to have in order to attract many of the Westerners.
Yeah, that's a given.
Yeah, and I don't really know what went on at Krishna West to bring up this discussion.
Well, I'll tell you what went on. There was on the morning show at Nam Ras, he had a guest that criticized it heavily, almost in a disrespectful way. And then it was reported to Brahmatirtha Hridayanandamaya, so they said, let's have a discussion. So then they went on the show and they discussed it. So someone forwarded it to me and I watched it. And it is an issue, you know, of the culture and what place the culture has, et cetera. So I decided I would write an article on it.
Can you forward it to me?
Well, it'll be on Monday Morning Greetings, but not this Monday, because I now have to think about it more deeply. Although I did show it to a few people and got good feedback. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Bhakti Devi. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello or make a comment? And we can.
Hare Krishna. It's Akiko.
Hare Bo, Akiko.
Hare Bo. It made me think of my theater experience, and also, you know, coming from Japan, and now I'm starting to get into the bhakti culture. External to internal, it's always helpful to me. Hmm. When I put on my costume, I become that character. Or when I put on kimono, I behave like a Japanese.
Wow.
And when I put on sari, to go to Bhakti Center Seva, you know, it helps me to serve in a more humble way somehow.
Oh, I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, just a few people say hello and then we'll end for today.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for a very interesting conversation.
Okay, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Malati. Oh, okay. I also appreciate being part of that discussion. That was interesting and helpful to hear.
It was. It was. I liked it. It was good that he was on. Because I already been in correspondence with him, and I'm definitely going to delay the article and think about it for a little bit more. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Shri Gandharvika.
Jai, Hare Krishna. Good. Wow.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Hemala Tarrada.
Hare Bo.
Thanks so much for such a great discussion. It was very enlightening. Thank you.
That's the your friend.
Yes, yes, I know.
Florida's husband.
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bo.
Hare Bo. Thank you for the class.
Anybody else?
Yes, Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for this class. Very, very interesting. And I learned a lot.
Okay, thank
you. A lot
you.
Of questions I always
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Nityangi Didi Dabhupasi.
Hare Bo.
Hare Krishna. Good. Thank you so much.
Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Gumaraj. This is Kishori Radha.
And Tota Gopinath.
Hare Bo. Wow.
Hare
Krishna from New Jersey. Krishna, yeah. New Jersey.
Wow.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Advaita. Thank you so much for the discussion. This was wonderful.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Anybody?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Gopa Kishore.
Hi, Bo, Gopa.
Hi, Bo. How are the Bhattacharyas doing? I haven't heard from them in a while.
They're retired to Mayapur.
Mayapur, oh, okay.
They live there for the rest of their lives now.
Good.
Through his work, he actually bought an apartment. And, you know, she has very bad arthritis or something. So she mostly stays in her apartment, but, you know, it's quite Christian. I went over there about two or three times when I was in Mayapur last time to have her wonderful cooking. Anybody else? Okay, I'll see whoever comes back at 11. Thank you. Hare Krishna.